Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Elizabeth Candelario, and I am here today representing Dr. Fred Pasternak, the petitioner in this case. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. Your Honors, this case is in its sixth year of pendency and is before this Court for the second time. It involves matters of first impression and in that regard is heavily fact-dependent, and the facts and circumstances demonstrate that the NTSB's decision should be reversed. In order to not delay justice any further, Dr. Pasternak respectfully asks that this Court reverse the NTSB's findings that Pasternak was subject to random drug testing and the finding that he refused a drug test. The circumstances of this case are outside the scope and intent of the regulations at issue. Random drug tests are meant to protect the flying public.
Can I ask, assume for the moment that he's covered by the regulations. We'll get to the next question. The regulation says, as an employee, you have refused to take a drug test if you fail to remain at the testing site until the testing process is complete, period. He did fail to remain at the testing site until the testing process is complete, correct?
Yes, but Your Honor, it's admittedly not a strict liability provision.
But it's not, I'm not saying whether it's a strict liability or not, it's the regulation. The rule is that pilots are supposed to know the regulations of the FAA. We have 1,000 cases about knowledge of the law is no excuse. Do you think knowledge of the law is an excuse?
Well, in this case, there's also, when you look at the regulations as a whole, Appendix H to Part 40, which indicates that leaving without permission is a refusal to test.
Well, they found as a matter of credibility that he wasn't given permission to leave. He doesn't claim that the collector said, okay, you can leave now, right? He doesn't say that.
Well, Your Honor, if you look at all the facts and circumstances, I think it's clear that he was permitted to leave and return and complete a valid test.
Permitted in the sense they didn't shackle him to the chair?
But no one told him that there was anything wrong with him leaving.
Well, the regulation tells him that there's something wrong. The regulation says you have refused to take a drug test if you fail to remain. Why is there more to it than that?
Because the regulation also indicates that leaving with permission is not a refusal, and there's
But he didn't get permission. Did he testify that they told him it was okay to leave?
He said, in response to the question, I think she said okay.
Yeah, and and that was found to be not true, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And we have to defer. You said it was very fact-based, and we have to defer to that fact-finding, don't we?
Well, you don't have to defer to facts that are arbitrary and capricious. And if you look at what
I read the record to say here, you know, one way helps you, one way hurts you, that there was no permission, but there also was no objection. And that's where I thought the record stood as of now, as we have to take it. No permission, but no objection. And therefore teeing up an interesting legal question, perhaps.
Yes, and if you look at all the facts.
You agree there was no permission, then we're stuck with the no permission.
There was no explicit, you have my permission to leave. That's correct.
But there also, this is more a question for the other side, there also, I think, was no objection.
Correct. And everyone was aware that Dr. Pasternak planned to leave and return. He told them that. And the only response was, I believe, well, I'll have to tell your employer. And he said, okay, which he understood to mean it's fine for you to leave and come back. No one explicitly said, you have permission, but no one told him. No one objected when he said the plans. So in his mind, he had permission to leave and come back. And when you consider this and the fact that all of the relevant parties in this test, the employee taking the test, the collector who is administering the test, and the employer who is the one with the responsibility to make a determination of whether or not this is a refusal, all of those individuals proceeded with this test as if it were a valid test.
But the theory I understood the board to ultimately settle on was, okay, there was no objection, perhaps, or explicit objection, but he should have known. He may not have known that leaving would be a refusal to test, but he should have known. And that picks up on the Chief Judge's question about knowing the regs. So why isn't should have known good enough?
Well, the basis of should have known is one line and one page of a 74-page handbook that he was given in training.
No, but he's a pilot, right?
Yes.
He has to, and this is a Code of Federal Regulations section specifically asked what is a refusal to take a DOT drug test. I mean, you could say There are a lot of rules in my motor vehicle handbook that they gave me when I passed my driver's license test, which apparently I can just send in over and over again. I don't have to read that handbook again. I don't remember every one, and there are a lot of them about exactly how many feet I can't park from a hydrant or from an intersection. And I frankly don't know what those are. I don't know how many feet. But I should know because I drive, and I have a handbook, and I can look it up at any point. And here you have a federal regulation of pilots in, you know, a much tougher position, I would think, than just the ordinary driver trying to figure out where to park. And it's his obligation, they say, it's his obligation to know what the regulations are, and therefore he should have known them.
Well, Your Honor, in the example of a fire hydrant, how many feet you can park from it, normally there are parking signs where there's a sign saying, you know, no parking beyond the
sign,
or the curb.
Maybe in your neighborhood, not in mine.
Or a lot of times the curb will be painted yellow.
In most neighborhoods you have the sign, right?
Or you have the curb.
Why do they have the signs?
Mm-hmm. And similarly here, you have these guidelines that the collector, by those guidelines, which the regulations require she be knowledgeable about, the regulations even provide a link to the current version of the guidelines, and those guidelines mandate that she give a warning.
Right, so she's in violation for not giving a warning. That seems fair. But mm-hmm. there's nothing in those guidelines that say if she fails in her duty that the person who left mm-hmm. is off. It's a separate set of obligations, but it's not an there's nowhere in the guideline that says that excuses the pilot, does it?
No, not in the guidelines, Your Honor, but we argue that consistent with the NTSB's treatment of other instances of policy guidance being held against the airman, in this case it makes sense that her failure does excuse his leaving, and it is entirely relevant to a consideration of whether or not a violation occurred, because that warning is there for the protection of airmen. This is not something.
Well, how do we know it's for the protection of airmen? Maybe it's for the protection of the flying public. Don't leave. Don't leave, because if you leave, you're going to lose your license. But it's a deterrent against somebody leaving and not getting tested.
Well,
I don't know that it's for the protection of the airmen.
Well, in this case, the consequences of him leaving are this action.
And that's protection for the public. But I'm not sure. I mean, if it said, and if you don't get a warning, then you can leave, that would be one thing. But it just seems like a separate set of, you know, there are obligations on the police. They have to do various things. That doesn't protect necessarily, except in constitutional questions about exclusion of evidence. It doesn't, which are rare, it doesn't get the defendant off.
But, Your Honor, I mean, we would argue that the guidelines are there for a reason, and this requirement is there for a reason.
Suppose he left for – I don't want to interrupt you.
No, I'm finished.
Okay. What if he had left for a week?
The important thing is he didn't leave for a week, and he told them that I'm going to leave and I'll come back. I have an appointment that I have to make. And he did, in fact, return just a few hours later. And everyone,
the theory behind the rule must be that leaving and maybe returning at some later point increases the likelihood that any drugs in your urine won't appear.
I mean, I think the drugs that are being tested for a few hours wouldn't really make a difference. And the intent on, like you said, if it was a week, that would be an entirely different situation. That's leaving and trying to avoid the test.
Did he come back after the test place was closed, though? After 3 o'clock, I think it was.
He did come back after 3 o'clock, yes. And they allowed him in and allowed him to complete the test with the consent of his employer at that time.
What are the consequences? I realize that's not directly relevant to the legal issue here, but I'm curious reading this. What are the consequences to your client of this?
Well, in this case, all of his certificates have been revoked. Including his ability to serve as an airman medical examiner, which is a large part of his medical practice. So he's been suffering financially, as well as this has harmed his career and his reputation, not to mention that it's been hanging over his head for nearly 6 years now that he's been fighting against this. And at the time, he had a valid understanding. But, Your Honors, we would argue that he wasn't even subject to the regulations in the first place. If you, under a proper reading of the Department of Transportation regulations as far as who is subject to a drug test, because he was not at the time capable of performing any safety-sensitive functions, and it's only employees who perform safety-sensitive functions that are subject to the test.
What about a pilot who has reached the maximum number of hours and has to rest for 8 hours before the pilot can, or something like that? I don't know exactly what the regulation is for commercial pilots, but it's something like that, right? Mm-hmm. Is that person subject to the test?
Well, yes, because there's still someone who's capable of performing or has...
But are they, if the rule is flat, you cannot fly again for 8 hours until you sleep for 8 hours. Mm-hmm. Is that person capable of, they're not capable of performing?
Well, under the...
What's the difference between that person and your client?
Well, Your Honor, in that case, it's just a mere passage of time. You know that in 8 hours, they will be able to fly again. They're still validly within the realm of people who are legally capable of being called upon to fly. And there's, in the Department of Transportation, best practices for drug testing. When it's in a situation like that, the person would be called for testing when they are able to return to duty immediately, once their name is drawn. In Dr. Pasternak's case, there's no guarantee he was ever going to be current again, that he would ever be ready to fly. This wasn't just a mere passage of time and he'll be ready to go. There were requirements that he had to complete and he was legally incapable of.
Of course, he thought he was subject to the test because he showed up for the test.
He just, you know, he followed the instructions that he was given. He got there. He thought he was doing everything. You know, the fact that he was able to just show up at his own convenience, you know, he was called and said, in a few days when you get these forms, go take the test. So he went of his own accord and showed up at the testing center.
It wasn't quite of his own accord. His employer, who he was the principal owner of or part owner of, right, said he had to do it, right?
I'm sorry. I guess that's – I don't mean to say of his own accord, but the exact day and time of the test were of his choosing. No one told him he had to be there at a specific time or on a specific day. So he went and following instructions and showed up for the test. And because he chose the time – and the day, he didn't think it was a big deal if he left for an appointment and came back, since there was no scheduled time and day for his test to take place. We argue that's an entirely reasonable belief on his part and a very relevant factor in considering whether or not this situation was a refusal, if you do find that he was subject to the regulations requiring he take the test.
Question? Here. Okay, thank you. We'll hear from the other side.
May it please the Court, I'm Agnes Rodriguez on behalf of the Administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration. Dr. Pasternak was subject to FAA-mandated drug testing because the Administrator, in an exercise of his statutory authority, determined that it serves the interests of aviation safety to subject even part-time intermittent air carrier pilots to random drug testing under their air carrier employer's mandated programs. So when Dr. Pasternak unilaterally decided to leave the collection site before completing the testing process, his unauthorized departure constituted a refusal under the federal under the regulations, and there was no exculpatory justification for his doing so. Although Dr. Pasternak...
no exculpatory justification, you agree that that's part of the analysis?
That's part of the board's analysis. Yes, he raised an exculpatory defense, and the board considered whether or not there was.
So it's not just that leaving alone; it's leaving without an exculpatory.
Without permission. Yes, that is.
Well, is exculpatory equal always permission, express permission?
Well,
what if you just stepped out for 10 minutes?
That would if it's without permission, it's without permission. So it is. It is that he cannot step out. He needs to be within the purview of the collectors and those that are monitoring the collection.
Why would he have left, do you think, if he knew that leaving was a refusal?
I can't speculate why he would have left. I mean,
it doesn't make sense, does it?
I
read the record here, and obviously been through this case once before. I don't really understand why he would have left only to come back shortly thereafter if he knew that leaving was a refusal to test. And so I think the board recognized that too and threw in the should have known. But if we're on the new, I don't see how it's plausible to say he knew.
Well,
It wouldn't make any sense.
Dr. Pasternak, as Judge Garland mentioned, the regulation says that the person is...
I get that on the should've... I get the should've known, but on the new, I just... And reading this record now second time through this case, it doesn't make sense to me that, yes, he knew that leaving was a refusal to test, and he still left.
Well,
given the consequences that come from that, it makes no sense at all. It does, so that puts us into the should've known box, and I have trouble on the should've known, and I think that's a close question.
Well, what happens here is that, you know, in the same way that Dr. Pasternak understood that before the next time he could fly a charter flight for Northeastern, he would have to complete his currency requirements, he also should have known that if he left, that would be a refusal. Because these are all obligations that are set forth in the Federal Aviation Regulations that are addressed to him as a certificated pilot who's employed by an air carrier.
Was he required to come at some determined time?
I'm sorry?
Was he required to come at a time that was determined by the government?
He was notified by his employer. The way that the program works is that the employer is supposed to notify the employee that they've been selected for a random test and that they need to report for the random test. And in this particular case, Dr. Pasternak's employer told him that they were mailing him the custody and control form that he was going to need to present at the time of the collection, and as soon as he received that form, he needed to proceed. Well, he explained at the hearing that when he got that custody and control form was on the day before he actually went for the test, which was June 4th, I believe. And in that case, he looked on the website and determined that the collection site had stopped taking collections. So he went the following day because he had received the forms too late to present himself. And so in that regard, he presented himself at the collection site in accordance with the directions of his employer, which is what he's required to do. Those are his requirements.
What I was trying to understand in connection with drug testing, this is not a situation where you're told this day, this minute, show up. Right?
Not in this particular circumstance, no.
So, I mean, we're trying to understand whether the agency's construction of refusal in this context makes any sense. And I think what my colleague just asked you raised one question. I have another one, too. I mean, how does it equal refusal? He's not required to come at any particular time.
He comes. Well, he was required to come as soon.
He had to come. He came. There was no precise time. And if he did know that leaving would amount to his losing all rights, then why isn't it plausible that in his mind he was indicating, I'm going, I'm coming back, and no one objected to that. No one said there's a problem, even though a guideline instructs the collector to do that. And he did come back. So there's no threat that he somehow cleaned the system. It doesn't make sense when you're thinking about refusal.
In the context of the regulations, Congress mandated that we promulgate regulations for how air carriers are supposed to drug test their employees that perform safety-sensitive functions. And in this particular case, what constitutes a refusal is not defined by the individual's alleged state of mind, but by the conduct that in the experience of the agency has established over the decades of drug testing, that when people short-circuit the drug testing process, a process that has been designed to ensure the integrity...
He left. Let me finish my question. He left with no one saying dire consequences. The collector says, I'll tell your employer. The employer said, fine. He came back and he got tested, and he was allowed to be tested even though the doors were closed.
What constitutes a refusal is...
I hear your literal...
Yes, and
we're talking about people and rights... And justice is supposed to have a little bit of understanding and compassion when we're talking about people. So I'm trying to get this right here. And it's not, at least to me, it's terribly unfair for the government to say, I read the words this way, that's it, I don't care. If he walked outside and had coffee and you didn't have permission, he's done, which is what you just said, which is very strange to me. That's a notion of justice I've never learned. So in this context, I'm trying to understand, he left with the understanding of the collector, who didn't say there was any problem. The collector called the employer. The employer didn't say it was any problem. The employer who does the scheduling, he came back, and they tested him. And
Your Honor,
no one said, we can't test you now because you're done.
The collector never told him it was okay for him to come back.
I understand,
back.
But
it
the collector never said this is a bad thing.
And
even though the collector has guidelined instructions to give notice. So he may have known all those things. So if he's as knowledgeable as you say, he may have known that the collector was supposed to give some notice if there was going to be a problem. No notice was given. He was allowed to go with no one objecting. The employer didn't object. He came back and they opened the doors, which they didn't have to do.
He actually walked through the door, passed a sign that said they had stopped doing collections, and
did they do the sample?
They told him that they were not able to do because he had left and returned. And because he had left and returned, they were going to have to contact his employer. And so when they contacted the employer, the person who happened to answer the phone for the employer at the time was not somebody who supervised safety-sensitive employees and just told the collector, well, if he's there, go ahead and test him. So that didn't constitute permission.
Are you suggesting that, because I didn't read this in the decision, that was what influenced the board, that the employer's consent was not really the employer's consent because it was just someone who answered the phone?
No, he has to have permission to leave at the time that he leaves. He can't get it after the fact. And what the board found in this case is that the responsibility for staying at the collection site until the testing process is complete.
Who says he can't get it after the fact? Why can't there be retroactive permission?
Because you have to leave with permission.
Is there something in the regulations that says you can't get retroactive permission? That is, in light of all circumstances, it was all strange. You just went out and had coffee. We didn't really mean to suggest that that was a refusal. Go ahead and do it. Who says you can't do that retroactively?
There is no provision that says it cannot be, but as a matter of what is in the interest of the flying public's ensuring the integrity of the testing process and the integrity of specimens that are collected and subsequently tested.
So I don't see how this
process.
Well, okay, if you want to talk about integrity of the testing process, are you making an argument that waiting a couple hours altered the results here?
That's the potential. What the refusal regulation in this case embodies is a judgment that leaving before you complete the testing process reflects an effort to avoid testing or to somehow interfere with that testing process.
The problem I'm having is just on the facts of this case. This strikes me, as it did last time around, as a very unusual case. And the reason the guidance has been issued is to avoid these kinds of very unusual cases, to make clear to people who may not realize stepping outside for 10 minutes is going to end their careers that no, you can't do that, and so they need to be told, right? And that avoids, just like, if you park in the wrong spot and there's not a sign, oftentimes the ticket won't be written. Well, here it was, make sure you put the sign, the notice, tell the people that if they leave, that's going to be a refusal. And it just strikes me that, this is an unusual set of facts.
Well, what you have here, though, is a set of guidelines, a procedure and a guideline that is nowhere included in the actual regulation that applies to the collector, which is 40.193B, and what she needed to do, what she must follow in connection with the shy bladder procedures. This was something that the NTSB noted when they did an analysis of the regulations. Mm-hmm. There is no requirement under 40.193B that the collector give a warning. And in fact,
is it okay today, as we sit here, that collectors don't give such warnings when people leave?
They don't have to, because not only because it is an aspect of the regulatory obligation of the person being tested. It's very fundamental and very simple. When you go for a test, you stay till the testing process is complete. And the way that a test is signaled as complete by the collector is after everything's been done, the collector is required to then advise the person that they are free to leave the collection site mm-hmm. at that time. Absent that, the test is not complete, and they leave without permission.
What's the reason for the rule in the first place, not allowing people to leave and then come back?
Because part of this is ensuring that in this particular sense, in Dr. Pasternak, because he was starting to undergo the Scheibe-Ladder, where he needed to stay within a relatively controlled environment where
to ensure
that he had a fair opportunity to provide a sufficient specimen.
Safety-related reason for not letting people to leave.
So that whatever the specimen, that there was some reasonable assurance that the specimen provided had not in any way been interfered with, and it was properly handled by the collector.
How could those things happen just by a delay of an hour or two?
Well, it just opportunity to obtain adulterants or to obtain a substituted specimen to give more time for the drug if they used a drug to dissipate that sort of.
You have a couple things there. He gave some sample when he came the first time, right?
Yes, it was insufficient.
Right.
It hadn't even reached the point where they could even tell.
But it was something, right?
Yes.
Okay. And then second, you mentioned the time passing, but there was no precise time and place he was supposed to give the sample in the first place, right? I don't know. In jobs where I've been drug tested, they knock on your door and say, come with me.
Right. Well,
and there's no show up in a few days.
What is the rule about how much time from when you receive the
form? It just says that the rule is under he has to appear within a reasonable time in accordance with the directions of his employer. And in this case, he did that. Mm-hmm. He received the custody and control forms, as the evidence indicates, at a time when the collection site had stopped taking collections. So that's why he presented himself. And he explained, that's why I didn't go the day that I actually got the custody and control forms. I came the next day. So within a reasonable parameter of time, you still have a time requirement. And not only do you have a regulation.
If you'd come a week later, would that have been okay?
No, because
What does it say? I might.
Well, because to the extent that his employer told him, because his employer's instruction was go as soon as you can after you receive the custody and control form, and so a week later would be a harder, unreasonable, and it would be probably more problematic for him on that end. But this conduct in this case is about his failure to remain at the collection site. And as a pilot for Northeastern, he was given training, and he was trained on the drug and alcohol testing program of Northeastern. And he was also, in the course of his conversation with the medical, and that training consisted both of a classroom session that went over all the aspects of the program, including what constitutes a refusal, which included the very conduct that he engaged in this case. He also received a handbook in connection with that also was something that he had as a reference.
What if he thought the lack of objection was implied permission? And suppose he's wrong. He's wrong on that. Under the regs, no, that's not permission. But he thought, because they didn't object, that he was free to go to his appointment. I guess he had an appointment for a patient and come back. Scheibe-Ladder, after all, it's going to take a little while to overcome.
Well, I think in this case, the board's previous decision in Administrator versus Heil is particularly instructive, because in that case, the board had rejected an airman's claim that he had received permission to leave the collection site from a receptionist who told him it was okay to go. And what the board found was that the great weight of the evidence established, very similar to this case, that in fact the collector in the case had told him to wait, and that he was also in the middle of a Scheibe-Ladder procedure, and he nonetheless left with the knowledge that he had not completed the testing process, even though he had been told to wait. And so I think that the NTSB's decision in Heil is very instructive on that. And also turning back to what he should have known, when he had the conversation about this refusal with the chief medical review officer, Dr. Hoffman, Dr. Hoffman even asked him, why did you leave the collection site? You know, given your training and your experience as a pilot, why did you leave the collection site? And Dr. Pasternak admitted to him that he should have known better. So these are all things that, you know, whatever his reasons were, they were violative of the requirement that fell squarely on him as a pilot.
How many people are subject to this random testing every year?
I couldn't tell you, Your Honor. I mean, the...
talking about thousands?
I'm sure. You know, collectively, overall, modes of transportation, I'm sure it's in the tens of thousands.
How often does shy bladder occur?
You know, I don't know that it occurs in my personal experience in handling these cases.
I'm asking about your personal
of handling the cases. It happens periodically. I don't know that it's terribly common or uncommon.
It's unusual because people.
Yeah, I mean, there's a procedure for how to deal with it. So obviously, it's something that the regulations anticipated, mm-hmm. because they have procedures in place.
This isn't the only circumstance in which somebody might leave the testing site, right? Shy bladder is just something where somebody says that's the reason I'm leaving.
Right, right.
People could leave for any reason and give that as
right,
the reason.
Exactly.
There's not a special regulation.
Right.
That tests whether you actually have this problem or not.
No, I am sorry. What I meant to say is that he was in the middle of the shy bladder procedure and so therefore he had not completed the testing process. Anybody under any circumstances who fails to remain without completing the testing process runs afoul of this requirement and is subject to the consequences as a result.
But if you got, I just want to nail this down, if you got permission, that's okay to leave. Right.
Well, it has to be permission, you know, authoritative permission,
yeah,
because obviously in Heil, the receptionist wasn't good enough.
Okay, so, but would the tester, would Montalvo have been good enough?
If Montalvo had given clear permission to him that, yes, it's perfectly okay, but in this case, that's not
his mistake.
You have a credit.
And this is, we're either going to hammer him or not on this. His mistake was in interpreting the lack of objection as implicit permission, and whether that's, you know, whether that works.
Well, his mistake was in leaving the collection site once
without permission.
And I take
the record as it comes to us. He did not have express permission. I also take the record to be that there wasn't an express objection, and his mistake. Even if he wins here, is 6 years of legal fees. His mistake was thinking that the lack of objection meant he could go.
His regulatory obligation is to remain until the testing process is complete.
Unless
that's his obligation.
Unless there's permission.
And if he had permission,
just to go back to your sentence, unless there's permission, correct?
If he had permission to leave,
he could
that
leave.
Was not precipitated by him.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't his unilateral decision
to go. Precipitated by him? He's going to ask for the permission.
Well, he made the unilateral decision in this case to leave, and he did not wait, even by his own testimony.
He had a conversation with Montalvo. There's a dispute about it, but we take the record as it comes to us. He did not get express permission, but also she did not make an express objection or express...
She objected to his leaving by telling him that he needed to stay, and that if he left, she would have to contact his employer.
Right.
She didn't give him the warning, but she did tell him that, and he said fine, and he left.
Right. Okay.
And when he came back, he was also told, and he even corroborated the fact that he was told that they couldn't test him because he had left and come back.
Mm-hmm.
So just to quickly...
I think we've had enough time. We're 11 minutes over, if it's all right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the other side. I'm sure she's over, too. We'll give you two more minutes.
Your Honor, I just want to clarify a couple of things. First, regarding the timing issue and whether it would have mattered that he ended up giving a sample a few hours later than if he had just remained. Under the regulations and the proper shy bladder procedures, if he had remained at the test site, he would have given the sample at the exact same time as he did leaving and returning. It was within
the... So you think the whole regulation is just arbitrary and capricious and we should overturn it? I mean, is your view that the regulation that says, as an employee, you refuse to take a drug test if you fail to remain at the testing site until the testing process is complete, and assume for the moment that the person wasn't told anything.
Mm-hmm.
Your view is that people should be able to leave if they're not told anything because it's not an effective safety procedure? Is that what you're arguing?
Our argument is that it's a very fact-specific case-by-case determination since this is not a strict liability provision.
That means in the thousands and thousands of these drug tests that are done every year, mm-hmm. if a collector fails, and I don't know, some small percentage, but still 100 mm-hmm. cases to warn the person not to leave, that person can leave. Is that right? That person can leave. That's your position. And they can go out and fly an airplane the next day.
Not necessarily, Your Honor. No,
why not?
If they leave and they leave with the intent of avoiding the test, that's a completely different situation.
We have to adjudicate. With the intent part, we don't know what it is. The person will in every case say, I intended to come right back. I didn't intend to leave. I had to go and do some medical procedures. I had to do this or that. Each one will have to be adjudicated.
Well, Your Honor, I think if they leave, if they actually do come back and successfully complete a test, as Dr. Pasternak did, then there's no basis to find that they refused anything.
Well, then the regulation is the basis. But you're saying the regulation isn't important enough for us to enforce as it's written. Is that right? Because you say that it doesn't really effectively do what they want to do.
Well, Your Honor, when you look at
you were arguing, like Judge Kavanaugh was suggesting, an implicit permission case here. That is, said it. I was very mm-hmm. clear dialogue between us. She wasn't raising any protest, and they allowed me to take the test when I came back, and the employer didn't call me and say, you're in deep trouble. I thought that was your argument.
Yes.
Not that the regulation itself is deficient. The regulation is not deficient.
Exactly, Your Honor. It's in this situation where he understood that he had permission, and admittedly, if you leave with permission, it's not a violation under the regulation.
If he had been told that if you leave, that's going to constitute a refusal to test, and he had still left.
Mm-hmm. Well, then clearly that would have been a refusal. But he
okay.
was not given that
right.
crucial
piece
of information.
But you acknowledge that would be a
yes,
refusal.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, and if we leave out the idea that she said okay, mm-hmm. assume that we adopt the credibility finding that was not said, what is it that creates implicit permission here?
Well, if you look at all the facts and circumstances, notably that when he returned, he was allowed to complete the test and give a valid sample.
But that happens after the fact, right? So mm-hmm. What before the fact indicated that?
Well, the fact that he went up and he said, I can't wait. I don't want to wait. I'm going to leave and come back. Mm-hmm. And nobody said you can't do that. Nobody stopped him. They just let him walk out the door.
It is, again, a failure to expressly say. In the thousands of cases, mm-hmm. if the person says, I can't wait, I'm leaving, and walks out the door,
mm-hmm.
then they don't get drug tested during that period.
Well, they still have to be drug tested.
But not during that period. They can avoid this particular rule.
Well, if there's some indication that they understood they were permitted to leave.
In the example we're giving, the only evidence that he knew before he left mm-hmm. that he was permitted to leave was that he said, I'm leaving, and nobody restrained him or said, don't mm-hmm. go.
And what they did say was, I'll have to call your employer. And he said, that's fine, because when they did get in touch with the employer had no problem with the situation.
I mean, that's what seems to be crucial in your argument, is you're mm-hmm. saying there was a clear conversation
mm-hmm.
between the collector and the charged person. It's not like someone sitting saying, you know, I've had enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got to go do some other things, and walked out the door.
Yes, he...
no conversation. You're saying they went and he had a dialogue, said what he had to do, and her response, knowing what her responsibilities are under the guidelines, her response was, okay, mm-hmm. but I have to call the employer.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
That's correct.
That's your implicit permission.
Yes.
So when somebody says... if a child says, I'm going to cross the street against a light, and I say, I'm going to tell your mother if you do that, that's permission to go ahead? Isn't that what happened here?
Your wife that? You wouldn't live to find out.
But if I told my child that, which is the way I put the hypothetical, mm-hmm. that I will tell your mother on you if you do that.
Well,
isn't that what's happening here? The person's saying, if you leave, mm-hmm. I will tell your employer. And the implication being that there'll be consequences.
Well, the difference here is that Pasternak said, okay, that's fine. Notify my employer. I don't think they're going to care. Given
yeah,
the
yeah. And I can imagine that. Certain children saying, yeah, tell my mother. That doesn't mean it's okay.
But the difference is the mother is going to care and doesn't want the child to do that. And in this case, Dr. Pasternak understood that his employer wouldn't have an objection.
Well, maybe that's true. There are a lot of possible reasons, including that he was the owner of the airline. It's mm-hmm. possible that's why he knew the employer wouldn't care. But I don't think that's really relevant. I think we have to think about what the rule is going to be for thousands of cases.
Well, Your Honor, I think another important distinction with this case something else I wanted to clarify. Judge Kavanaugh asked about the normal drug testing process and, you know, what kind of notice the employee is typically given. It's actually under the regulations for random drug tests, they must be unannounced and the employer must report immediately to the test site. That's typically an obligation of the employer, but in a normal test, you don't have this period of a few days where the employee can go, you know, oh, when you get the forms, go at whatever time is convenient for you that day. They're told when they're on duty, so you've been selected, you need to go right
why
now.
Why is this one different? Why was this one different?
I guess the nature of the employment relationship. Normally, I believe Dr. Pasternak explains that he would go right away when notified, but he didn't have any of the forms. Because it wasn't a day when he was working, since he was incapable of working. He was just called, and I'm not sure if he was at home or in his office. And so they said, oh, you don't have any forms, and we're going to mail some to you and
that
go.
That, again, sounds just like an argument that the rule is not really rational as applied to him rather than a rule about, you know, it seems like you're attacking the process, which may be worth attacking, but mm-hmm. wasn't what I understood to be the nature of your argument before.
Well, we're just saying all these facts and circumstances mm-hmm. should be considered in determining whether in this case there was a refusal.
Okay. Take the matter under consideration. Thank you very much.